Legoland Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the first episode of the week of the Calcioland Podcast. First of all, a shout out to our friends at Euro Fantasy Game. Yesterday, I had an article grading the summer transfer window all over again after 11 games. If you haven't checked it out, I think you'll enjoy it. So today we have a fun podcast. Since it's Monday, we're going to have our winners and losers from the Serie A weekend. We're going to answer some Twitter questions, and we're going to talk about Inter with our friend Nima Tavalli from Sempre Inter at the end of the show. But before we get to all that, I'm joined by our great friend, the co-host, producer of the podcast, Alex Goldberg. So, Alex, I got to ask you, after 11 games, we have a pretty decent sample size. We have Juve sitting at 31 points. We have Inter and Napoli tied with 25. So let me ask you, do you think there is a Scudetto race? Do you think, you know, we've seen Juve, they drew against Genoa, other times against some mid to lower table teams. They did the bare minimum. We've seen the contrast of Napoli and Inter winning some of these matches pretty significantly. So based on that or any other factor, do you see a title race, or do you think this is going to be more of a one-trick pony?
Well, David, no, I think this is more of a one-trick pony. I want to say I see a title race because you're right. Inter and Napoli are playing really well. They're only both 6 points behind, which is just two wins. But with all that said, I don't see a title race for first. I see a title race if you can just exclude Juventus and pretend that second place is the title, because that's a really good race. But no, not with Juventus. You mentioned their only slip up so far is a draw to Genoa, and they were at home. They've taken care of their away matches against lesser teams, which you could occasionally call a trap game. That's my thing, is they've been around the block too many times. Max Allegri's been around the block too many times to not see these trap games coming. And when they draw to a side like Genoa, they usually perform pretty damn well after, and they don't let those things leak. And I just don't see many trap games like that. And of course, it would probably be the lesser sides where they would draw against or maybe even lose, and now Inter and Napoli see a window. But I just don't see Juventus doing that more than a couple times at most. We've talked about it a lot, but Juve is just so damn deep, and Allegri does such a good job of really putting players in right when he needs to. If he needs to give one player a rest, he will. He gets Bentancur in there this weekend. He picks up an assist. He's just got such depth. And we talk about it, David. Juventus's midfield is by far the weakest part of their team, yet he still manages to get a number of players from the midfield, from the defense, from the attack, working. Now you got Dybala with a goal over the weekend, and if Dybala starts scoring, and if Paulo Dybala starts being Paulo Dybala, and you got Ronaldo playing well, no, it's not a title race. I'm sorry, and I want to bullshit right now and say it is a title race, but it's not. In fact, this 6 points, that's probably as close as it will get, in my opinion. That's my opinion, David. What about you?
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. I know sometimes on Twitter I get criticized. Well, I tweeted pretty much what a great race it would be Inter and Napoli to lose a difference in style, differences in the cities they represent, everything. But yeah, I'm with you. The other thing, we've talked a lot about it on the podcast, that Allegri's teams tend to peak in the second half of the season. I think Juve has dealt with a good amount of injuries already, especially in the midfield now. They had the Douglas Costa suspension. They had the distraction from the Ronaldo off-field situation. So you would think, you know, that these things, in order to have a title race, it should be closer. And, you know, odds are Juve, you know, if they're still short in the midfield, we'll add a midfielder in January. They've done that in the past. As you mentioned, Dybala starting to kick into gear. So, yeah, I kind of agree. I see this Juve probably only getting better. So, you know, I hope to be proven wrong. I'd really want nothing more. Sometimes even with some of the tweets, I'm trying to jinx it. But, no, I'm kind of with you. But, you know, I'm of the belief that, you know, Serie A is still incredibly compelling, even without those. You know, I still find the games incredibly enjoyable. I don't write it off just because of that.
Yeah, and David, I'm glad you hit on that, because it's really not a detriment to Serie A. In fact, I almost think that even if Juve just wins the Scudetto, no problem, Serie A will still have a positive year and take a positive step forward if Inter continue playing like this, and Milan. But especially if you can say by year's end, Inter is now back, then that is a huge win for Serie A.
Yeah.
So, David, now that we've gotten that first segment out of the way, as we do every Monday after a weekend of Serie A, we go through some winners and losers. So who are our winners and losers for this episode of the Calcioland podcast?
Yeah, so we had a Friday's game, Napoli's big win against Empoli. I had written about it on Thursday on my weekend preview column. It really looked like Dries Mertens was ready to take off and claim that starter's role altogether. I really like Milik. I hoped that it was going to be his season. But Mertens is showing why he's so important. I had a few people tweet me, and it is a valid point, that he's no longer a false nine. Describing him as that isn't accurate. He's just a full-blown striker now. He passed Careca, the Brazilian striker that played with Maradona on the all-time goal-scoring list at the club. He has Cavani in his sights. So clearly a winner. Then we had Inter steamrolling Genoa. João Mário, second strong performance of the week for him after playing well against Lazio. As Galliani, you know, if you ask Galliani about João Mário and the January transfer window, he'd say, we don't have to make any moves. We have João Mário. He's like a new player. He could really be an intriguing X factor for Inter. We had Gagliardini score a brace. Good news for Inter. I think they, you know, to me, Inter's kind of one midfielder short. So if either João Mário or Gagliardini really keep it going the rest of the season, that would really help them as well. You mentioned Dybala. He's been playing well recently. I think scoring at Old Trafford was a huge boost of confidence. I feel like now all the talk that he can't play together with Ronaldo is going to be a thing of the past. Ronaldo had another strong performance there. Then we had Lazio. Huge win against Spal. Immobile scored a brace in front of Mancini. I'm sorry, for the Italian national team. We had midfielder Cataldi, who hadn't started a game for Lazio, I think, in 2 years. With the injuries to Badelj and Lucas Lieva, got a start. It wasn't long ago, and Simone Inzaghi pointed out, he was a Lazio captain 3 years ago. Granted, it was more symbolic because he came up through the youth team. But he could be a player that's rediscovered, kind of a little bit like João Mário for Inter. Then we had Torino's surprising big win in Genova against Sampdoria. We had Belotti, hadn't scored a brace in quite some time, hadn't scored off a header in over a year. A good performance there. Torino right back, Di Silvestri, put on a masterclass performance. He had over 100 caps playing for Sampdoria previously. I know he has a strong allegiance to the club, but he really destroyed them in that match at Marassi. So well played there. Other winner, Atalanta. They've won 3 in a row. They kind of look like Atalanta again. Well done by them. They are so deep up front. We had the Ilicic show for a while. We had Barrow show signs. And now we have Zapata scoring. They have a lot of options up front. And, of course, Milan. Last-minute win against Udinese. Gattuso has to be thrilled. 2 last-minute wins with goals by his captain, Romagnoli. Really doesn't get any better than that. I think that takes Gattuso off the hot seat, at least for the time being. So huge win for Milan. They're sitting at 4th place. Considering how everything went so far, you have to be really happy about that if you're a Milanista. On the flip side, the losers. Empoli manager Andrea Zoli could be sacked today, be replaced by Beppe Iacchini. He's been getting a lot of praise for his style of play. You know, Empoli always has kind of that Sarri influence, but the results just aren't there. So it looks like he'll likely lose his job. Speaking of changing managers, Genoa's decision, and we talked about it on the podcast right away, it made absolutely no sense from a footballing standpoint to get rid of Ballardini, someone who had come in midseason and helped them avoid relegation. He started the season with 10 more points than Genoa had at the time last year when he was sacked. So really a great turnaround. He had launched Piontek. And Genoa's been a disaster ever since. I think everyone except for Preziosi saw that one coming. Their crosstown rival Sampdoria, who going into the Milan match a week from yesterday had only given up 4 goals in Serie A. They gave up 7 in 2 matches. Then we had Giaccherini with an own goal like I'd never seen before. That really sums up Chievo's season so far. I was thinking of Giaccherini You know, if Conte had gone to Real Madrid, I was wondering, man, has any player gone from Kiev or a last place team and said he had to Real Madrid to play for Conte? Now look at this, what happened there. Ventura, you know, who talked about seeing some good signs from Kiev from that match. I don't know what he was watching. Who knows if he'll last much longer as well. And the last one, Udinese, I have to say there was some buzz for them at the beginning of the season. Their new manager, Velasquez, the youngest in Serie A. But other than DePaul, they really, and Lasagna was quite good, they really don't seem to have much. So Udinese, you know, definitely a disappointment so far. But one thing that's never a disappointment are the Twitter questions we get from our listeners. As always, you can send us a question on calcio, transfers, TV, music, films, journalism, and podcasting using the CalcioLand hashtag. And which one are we going to go over today, Alex?
All right, David, let's start off with this bold question. Will Roma miss out on European competitions altogether?
That's a good question for you, Alex, because you were very low on Roma. I think you had them sixth going into the season. Right now they're in ninth place. It's definitely been a disappointment. Do I think they have a decent margin for improvement? Yeah, I do. I mean, a lot of their new players haven't done much, but, you know, I got to be honest, the past 2 years of the Monchi, the deals, there's really, so far, you have to be pretty disappointed with what we've seen so far. So, look, they have a young team, but I have to say the fact that the two new additions that have made the most impact are Olsen, who replaced the best goalkeeper in Serie A last season, Alisson. So, can't really be an upgrade. Like, if anything, he's like a slight downgrade, but he's done well. And Santon, who was throwing in the deal with Inter. Everything else, there's really been a lot of question marks there. So to be out of Europe altogether, they would have to finish outside of the top six. I think they'll be at least there, but I think a spot in the Champions League is going to be really tough this season. And that would come with a lot of negative consequences for the club.
Yeah, I'm still pegging them for sixth place. That's exactly where I have them. So they will sneak into a European competition, the Europa League. But listen, my thing with Roma is kind of similar to a question you posed to me a couple weeks ago, David, about Milan, or actually it was probably last week, saying, what will it take for me to think that Milan is really turning it around? And I kind of said, well, I need to see someone mirror Suso. Suso's having this great season. I want to see someone kind of mirror Suso and have two younger players really have a foundation. I need that with Roma kind of as well. Edin Dzeko is not a long-term piece for them. He's absolutely not. And I'm not really going to count Manolas at center back. I need kind of more of an attacker to really convince me. Under's been okay. He's been good. He's had his moments, but I'm nowhere near saying the same thing about Roma than I am about Milan, and that's really saying something. So as I said, from the start, Di Francesco may be a good manager, but that team, in my opinion, is really hard to manage. So David, let's move away from Roma and on to Lazio. What do you make of Lazio's inability to defeat the top teams in Serie A?
It's interesting. They beat Spal decisively. They've won all the games they absolutely should have won. And you know what? There are some people that tweeted at me, you know, that might actually be enough to make a Champions League spot. And that's not the craziest theory in the world. I guess it really depends how much you trust Milan and potentially Roma to finish ahead of them. I think, you know, the fact that they've struggled against the top teams goes back to the fact that we've talked about it ad nauseum. Is two of their three best players, Luis Alberto and Milinkovic-Savic, have just not been good this season. And I saw Simone Inzaghi when he was asked about Milinkovic-Savic. He had a diplomatic answer. He said last year he was put in a position where he could score a lot of goals. This season we need him to help us cover defensively a little bit more. We had seen that a little bit with Felipe Anderson, who was a devastating offensive player, and Simone Inzaghi played him a little bit more defensively. So I don't know if that's a real tactical thing or if it's a good excuse. But bottom line, for Lazio to beat the top teams, because there are a lot of good teams in Serie A at the top, they need those two to start playing well.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, David, next Twitter question. Who is the best mid-table manager this season? So someone that could eventually follow Sarri's career arc.
Yeah, it's a good question. And I know some people tweeted, you know, Gasperini, who I think is really good. I think he's great for a young team, developing young players, maybe making them look better than they are. So he's a good choice. He had a cup of coffee at Inter. I'm not going to dismiss his ability to coach a top team based on that. Inter was a mess back then. The other two, one, we've talked a lot on the podcast, De Zerbi, former Benevento Foggia manager, is doing really well at Sassuolo. kind of reminds me of a young Di Francesco, but with maybe even more upside. And the other is the person that replaced Sarri at Empoli, Giampaolo, who's done quite well at Sampdoria. The match against Torino was really bad, but he is a manager that plays a pretty offensive style, fairly similar to Sarri, and develops a lot of players. So those would be the ones that I would look at.
Okay, cool stuff. All right, David, why are stadiums so empty league-wide in Serie A? Which ultra groups would you consider to be the most dangerous?
Yeah, we've talked about this a little bit, but we have some new listeners, and I love answering these questions. I mean, these two questions are a little bit tied together, but let's be honest, if you've been to Italy in most stadiums, it's not a great in-game experience. It's hard to get tickets. The stadiums are old. It's not really a family atmosphere in most places. They've made it very easy to watch games on TV now in Italy with like a pay stations and whatnot. So, yeah, it's unfortunate. I think that would really help even from a visual standpoint. I even had someone, you know, pretty high up who was texting me during the Napoli-Roma match and was like, geez, why is the stadium in Naples empty? And there's a lot of times there are specific things to a region, like the Napoli fans aren't happy with the ticket prices and whatnot. But in general, it's not a great experience. The ultras certainly play a part in that. They also create great atmosphere in a lot of ways. And I want to highlight, you know, some of the stuff they do really well, the choreography, the sounds and all, can be really exciting, but there are some ultra groups that, you know, don't make it a great experience. As far as, you know, I would say the most aggressive and potentially most dangerous, put in air quotes, like I have a lot of friends that are ultras and they always tell me the three teams you don't want to F with are Hellas Verona and Atalanta. Those fans are really, really tough. I know Lazio, you know, for good reason, gets a lot of bad publicity for their ultras. But I'll tell you, they're by no means the only far right wing ultra group in Italy. A good amount of them are kind of with that ideology. So, you know, I'm not going to defend Lazio fans, but I think maybe they are portrayed as being the worst ones when there are some that are pretty comparable as well. So I hope this gets cleaned up. I know the atmosphere is definitely very important, but maybe there could be something down the middle where it's a little more family friendly.
All right, David, this next question, we're finally being put on the spot. So it is, as long as you are comfortable revealing it, which Serie A teams do you each support?
Okay, so I've talked about it on the podcast before. A lot of people think that me trying to be neutral is an act to get more listeners and all. It really isn't. Like, I'll tell you, I'm very honest. This is kind of how I am. I consider myself really an ambassador for Serie A. I just love calcio. Last season, it wasn't an act. I really wanted Napoli to win. I wanted Juve's, you know, time at the top to come to an end. I wanted an offensive team like Sarri's to win. I just loved that team. But I did grow up as a Juve fan when I was in Padova young. You know, I moved from Paris. I was born there. My parents got divorced. My mom got a job playing the cello in Italy. And Michel Platini from France was the best Juve player. So for that, I became a Juve fan. I followed them. But as I started writing a lot, and this is when I was writing on a Juve blog, I just stopped looking at them like as a fan. And I definitely still have that fan in me with the Celtics and Padova, so I know the difference. So, you know, that's just how it is. You can believe it or not. I can assure you that that's kind of how it is for me. What you see is what you get. And I do take pride in people telling me, oh, I don't know which team you support. I take it as a compliment.
Yeah.
What about you, Alex? Oh, you've been on the fence a few times.
I really have. I know over the summer I said I would be an official Roma fan if they signed Hakim Ziyech. That never happened. Or David Neres from Ajax. That also never happened. Last year, just like you, David, I wanted Napoli to win just for really the balance of the league. But of course, I love Lorenzo Insigne, Maurizio Sarri, and Jorginho were there last year. But let's call a spade. Let's not lie. If I had to pick one team, and you can call me a bandwagoner or not, it's got to be Juventus, just because I love Alessandro. David, you and I almost kind of got connected on Twitter when I liked Paul Pogba back when he was on Juventus. I always speak so highly of Max Allegri. If I had to pick one team, it probably would be Juventus, but I'm kind of a player fan, just like I am in the NBA. I'm an Alessandro and Lorenzo Insigne guy, mainly. The one sneaky team I'm kind of taking a liking to in terms of watchability, and a random team I've been watching besides the top ones, the team is Torino. I like Torino, and also they do have a Chelsea youngster, Ola Aina, on loan, who's doing quite well, by the way. Got another... Yeah, he got another assist this weekend. So Torino's been fun, but I guess gun to the head, I'll go with Juve. So that's me.
And those Torino jerseys are super nice.
Yeah, no, they absolutely are. I would never complain if an Ole Aina kit arrived on my doorstep. All right, David, let's move away from football for the last Twitter question. What's your take on Bohemian Rhapsody?
So I went into this seeing this movie knowing quite a bit about Queen. Not one of my favorite bands growing up, but certainly a band that had a lot of the records. I was very familiar with them. Freddie Mercury's death was definitely a big event in my teenage years in high school. I remember it quite distinctively. I had read, you know, some not so great reviews about this film, but I went in with an open mind. So the way I see it, this movie had three big challenges, and I think they did well with the most difficult one, which makes it, in a way, maybe a little bit the most frustrating. So for one, with these biopics, you can either go one of two ways. You can either focus on just a short amount of time on the band or the person you are covering and kind of really kind of explain the character and the persona of that person over a small amount of time. And I think you can do quite well with those. Or you can go bold and try to cover the person's entire life and the story of the band in about 2 hours and 20 minutes, which is what they decided to do with the Queen movie. So that was a challenge. They also changed the timeline of a lot of the events that happened to the band so that their performance at Live Aid, which was kind of one of the most legendary moments, was a bookend, the beginning and the end of the movie. And I can totally get that. That didn't bother me so much, but definitely some things were pretty forced, some pretty big plot things. If you're a fan, like, you can say, okay, we know that that didn't happen that way. So it depends how much that sort of stuff bothers you. To me, it didn't really bother me that much, those two things. And the reason I say that is the actor who played Freddie Mercury, Rami Malek, who was in Mr. Robot. He's absolutely amazing. I was absolutely blown away from that. I thought finding someone that could play Freddie Mercury well was going to be pretty much impossible. I compare it a little bit to the Tupac movie versus Straight Outta Compton. Like, they nailed the casting of Straight Outta Compton. You watch those guys, you feel like you're watching NWA. You watch the Tupac movie, you never feel like you're watching Tupac because he was so charismatic and bigger than life. And Freddie Mercury was in a lot of ways that way too. But this actor, Rami Malek, like, he nails it. After 10 minutes, I really wasn't thinking that I was looking at an actor. I just thought I was watching Freddie Mercury. So very well done. If you enjoyed if you enjoy Queen, go see it. The last complaint that I'll say, it's a PG-13 movie, and his life was definitely R-rated. But if you like good music, check it out. Okay, and with Inter on a strong resurgence in Serie A and them getting ready to face Barcelona tomorrow, we're recording this on Monday. What better person to have on than our dear friend Nima Tavalli? You guys know him as the founder of the outstanding website SempreInter.com. They have a great podcast that we're going to ask Nima about later on. He contributes to Goal. He also worked on the Marzio site, Calcio Mercato English, FC Inter News EN. One of the most knowledgeable people on Inter that I know of. So, Nima, it's a pleasure to have you on. Welcome back to Calcioland.
It's a pleasure being on this podcast. You know that. I love your work. I love this podcast. You know that.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Okay, Nima. So, I have to ask you, let's start more bigger picture with Inter, and then we'll talk about some of the new players, and we'll get into the Barcelona match later on in the interview. But let's just look big picture. I was in Italy not long ago. I was watching Inter Parma on TV, and I was watching the game. I was on the chat with all my colleagues on the Marzio site, and I was like, boy, this feels like a Parma goal coming any second now. And then it's a Inter play on loan, backup left back. I mean, this really looked like a movie we had seen over and over again with Inter, a lot of expectations. So let me ask you, when that happened, did you feel like, okay, here we go again? Or did you have enough faith on this team to think that they were going to turn it around?
I couldn't agree with you more there. I definitely felt that this was a movie we'd seen before. That's exactly my thought. Well, the more the game continued, because I thought that Inter were, you know, you watch the game, you know, Inter were dominating that game and creating so many chances, but you know, it just didn't click for them. And I was just waiting for someone. I mean, I was expecting Biabianin to score, you know, given his history with Inter, and he always plays good against Inter. And then obviously instead, Di Marco, another Inter player, came and scored the goal of his career. I wonder if he'll ever score anything like that ever again. Probably not. I mean, there's loads of those kinds of players in history who scored once against Inter and then they disappeared into anonymity. Inter seemed to be like Inter seemed to be kind of a magnet to that kind of thing. No, I was totally expecting it. And it was a beautiful goal. I mean, some people, you know, want to say that maybe Handanovic, you know, it was Handanovic's fault, but I think that's nonsense because there's no goalkeeper in the world who could have saved that goal. And then there was also some controversy that Spalletti was talking about and Handanovic were talking about how there was a player offside who was disturbing his view. Inter should have had a penalty, which they weren't given. All that, you know, all the usual polemica stuff, as the Italians say. So I expected it. But for me, what was more important than that was the fact that I wanted to see an Inter to show a sign of life. And they did against Parma. It didn't look good, but they showed a sign. They showed intention. They looked like a team that was, you know, that still hadn't really recovered from they were in the middle of preseason almost. And that's kind of true because they really got late because of the World Cup. And a lot of players came late to the training camp. And Nainggolan basically didn't have a preseason because of his injury, because he injured himself so early in the preseason. So that was I wasn't too upset by that. I was more upset with or a bit more annoyed with the inconsistencies in the refereeing.
So since then, Inter's won every match except for the game of the Camp Nou against Barcelona. Really, really remarkable turnaround. We're recording this after their really dominating performance against Genoa. So to me, this clearly looks like the best team that Inter's had since the treble. So let me ask you, A, if you agree with that, and what do you think is different about these teams? Because we've had in the past Inter get off to some pretty good starts, being in first place for a while, and then it completely falls apart. But this team feels pretty different to me. So I wanted to ask you kind of how you rate them compared to the Inter we've seen in, say, the last 4 or 5 years.
Well, first of all, I agree 110% with what you said about this being the best Inter since the treble. There is no doubt about that. Not just in terms of the players in the squad, but also in terms of the coach. This is the best coach we've had since Mourinho. There's no doubt about that. In terms of ownership, I would say this is probably the best ownership Inter has ever had, in the sense that it's a modern ownership, assuming a Fortune 500 company who just, you know, records record, revenues for their own company, and the way that they've transformed Inter from a dysfunctional Italian football club that was run the way Italian football clubs were run towards the end of the 20th century into an actual company that is a healthy, modern football brand in the 21st century. And they've only done that in less than 2 years, which is truly, truly remarkable. So I would, you know, from all points of view, I'd say that this is the most stable Inter that we've encountered in a very, very long time since Facchetti was running things. The thing is, like, one part of me, regarding the second part of your question, one part of me wants to, you know, say that, yeah, you're absolutely right. This Inter feels completely different. They're too stable. But at the same time, this is Inter. And, you know, if there is one chance, 1% possibility for Inter to screw things up, they will screw things up in a way that you didn't even think it was possible. I mean, I remember a couple of years ago when you tweeted out that so Inter are going through their Britney face shaved head running away from a reporter's part of the season. That is something Inter always goes through. But having said that, I agree with you. This does not feel like that way at all, because they seem so much more stable. They seem so much more relaxed, and they have a coach who seems to have the finger on the pulse of what exactly needs to be done, when and how. And when he, for example, lambasts them, instead of them becoming disgruntled, the players become more hungry to gain his affection and his praise. And that's good. Inter needs that. Inter has always been a very difficult club in the sense that there's so many wills going, but Spalletti seems to have united everyone, and that's why things are going so well.
Absolutely. So now let's talk about three players that have made an immediate impact. And this is something that Alex has been talking a lot in the summer, and I totally agree. Inter brought in, some players that were proven in Serie A and made the transition a little bit easier. There are three of them that have really stood out to me, and these are De Vrij and Asamoah, fantastic Bosman signing, especially considering their age. And Politano, I have to say, has surprised me in a positive way. So tell me a little bit. What do you think these three have brought to the table?
De Vrij is an incredibly, what a defender he is. I mean, he's so, so solid. He's such an intelligent defender. The way him and Skriniar are such a perfect match in the sense that, Skriniar is more the explosive one. De Vrij is more the one with the brains and the one that kind of directs the central defense, the same way Miranda did when he was playing with Skriniar. Skriniar he's so strong. He reads the game really well. And that's why he always manages to win the ball, because his read of the game is so, so good. But De Vrij has been the kind of missing piece in this defense. And it's so good that I think Inter now has three really, really good defenders in Miranda, Skriniar, and De Vrij. Also, De Vrij has given Inter something that we've not had, and that's a threat in the air, both, especially in set pieces going forward. And that's something Inter haven't had in quite a while. In terms of Asamoah, I mean, if we're talking football IQ, this guy is a football IQ that's in the, towards the 200s, because he barely puts a foot wrong. He can read the game. He runs between the lines. His crossing is great. He has he's so useful in so many positions, which he brings with him no matter which position he plays, and adapts and has a complete player aura about him, which is something to need. Someone who's stable, that even when they're having a really bad day, they don't fall through the floor. They have they might misplace a few passes, but they still keep a decent level. Politano is the kind of I'm really positively surprised by him. I was somewhat critical of him in the beginning of the season, but what I like about Politano is the fact that the way he runs, his left foot is really good, both at set pieces and shooting. And he gives Inter this kind of threat towards goal when he cuts in that Inter haven't had. I mean, some people say, criticize Souza and Robben and Ribéry for being one-trick ponies, but I don't really care about that as long as that one-trick pony gets that trick right. With Politano, he struggled a little bit to get that trick right. Now he's getting that trick right every time. And that's a sign of strength for me, because if you are a one-trick pony, but you manage to get that trick done every time, that means that they can't stop you. That means that you're so good. And I think Politano, he's not there yet, but he's certainly going towards that.
Yep, I completely agree. I have to say, Politano, I thought he was sensational for Sassuolo in the second half of the season. I wasn't sure if he'd be able to do it on a bigger stage, and he's been great. You could tell he was really, really happy to be joining Inter, and he's played like it. So those three have made already an impact, but there are more new additions that, for a variety of reasons, or could give Inter even more. So let me ask you, how big of a margin for improvement does the team have once we have Vershalko, who came with an injury, played in the World Cup, Nainggolan, who, as you mentioned, missed the entire basically preseason and has battled injury, Keita Balde, who arrived late in the winter, and Lautaro Martinez, who arrived from South America. I mean, do you see these four potentially giving Inter a new gear? Because when you look at the teams that have a margin for improvement, I definitely see Inter as one of them.
I couldn't agree with you more there, because everybody knows what a fit Raja Nainggolan can do. And I don't think he peaked at Roma. I don't agree with those who think that. I think that what happened with Roma was that the relationship between Nainggolan and Roma had reached its sell by date. I don't think he as a player had reached. I think he wasn't happy with how he was being treated. They weren't happy how he was behaving. So I think the relationship kind of reached its course. In terms of him as a player, I think he's got so much left to do. I think he gives Spalletti that tactical freedom to play in so many roles in so many ways that makes Spalletti really happy. Because if there's anything I've learned from watching Spalletti almost a year and a half now, is that he likes to move it around. He doesn't like to play just one way. And this Inter team is now a team that can hurt teams in several different ways, in the air, via crosses, down the middle, long shots, etc. And that's how Spalletti wants to keep it, because that makes your opponents, that makes it difficult to read for your opponents. In terms of the fullback, Versalico, I think, let's be honest, he's slowly now getting into the season after the World Cup and after a long season. So I think I'm one of those who really rates Versalico. He's one of my favorite players since I first saw him with Genoa. I've wanted him to come to Inter for such a long time. So I was so, so happy when they finally got him. In terms of Lautaro Martinez, I mean, the talent is there. I think this is more an issue of him basically getting accustomed to Italian football. People comparing him to Gabigol, I think is incredibly unfair and a little bit ignorant, because Gabigol came to Inter on a completely different basis. First of all, it wasn't Inter who wanted him. It was, this was Suning's way of buying a player that Juve was interested in as well. And this was a Brazilian star with his agent as well, his reigning agent, Chiara Sturacian, who was also, we could do a whole season of podcast on that guy. But let's not get into that too much. But yeah, that was a completely different thing. Lautaro Martinez has been thoroughly scouted by Inter. Ausilio has been wanting him for a long time. And I think that even if he doesn't deliver this season, which I think he will be eventually, I still believe that he will give this team something more of an edge moving on. Personally, I'd like to see him in the number 10 role behind Icardi, because I think that would be so exciting. But aside from that, you also have players like Perisic and Gagliardini, who are slowly getting into the swing of things, and that could also, there's a lot of room margin of improvement there, and Dalbert as well, and not to mention João Mario, who looked like a completely newborn player.
Right.
I mean, he looked like a newborn. I mean, if you look at 2018 and the biggest miracle that Spalletti has done, and I'm not using that word lightly, it's Brozovic. I mean, and now João Mario. I mean, Brozovic was basically in a taxi on the way to the airport in January. Spalletti basically dragged him out of that taxi because he was on his way to Seville. And since then, we're talking a world-class regista who plays in that double pivot role. It's gone brilliantly for him. Same thing with João Mário. Okay, it's only been two games, so I don't want to really jump the gun there. But if he manages to get these two guys who were deemed to be complete lost causes and they continue to play like this, as a colleague of mine said on our podcast, give Spalletti the keys to the city. I mean, it's his man management skills are unbelievable.
Yeah, I totally agree. We've talked João Mário and the winners and losers with you. Totally right. He's been like Gagliani would say, he's like a new addition. We don't have to make a move. He's been great. Yeah, and I'm with you. I think Brozovic has always said to me, as he goes, so does Inter. So you seem pretty bullish on Inter for good reason. So am I. I've been this way since the summer. So let me ask you one more Serie A question. Do you see a bigger gap between Juve and Napoli or between Inter and Napoli? Because look, last season, Juve and Napoli were in a class of their own. Inter snuck in at the last minute into the Champions League, but I think they've made up a lot of ground, as impressed as they've been with Napoli. So let me ask you, how do you see these gaps? Bigger Juve-Napoli or Inter and Napoli?
I think there's the gap between Juventus and the rest of the league is as big as the universe right now, because this Juventus side, if you look at that squad, there are 23 players who are all equally as good. This is a Juve team that's built to win everything now. Napoli with a new coach and a new system and some players who are new to the league. This Napoli aren't built to win the Serie A this season, but the next or the season after that. For Inter, it's about maintaining continuity to being in the top, to playing in the Champions League and the Serie A, the Coppa Italia. This is all a new experience for this team, first time in 7-8 years. So for me, there's a huge gap between Juventus and everyone else. But the gap between Napoli and Inter, and there is a gap. I do agree with you that there is a gap between Napoli and Inter to Napoli's favor. But I think that gap is very, very much, much smaller. And I think that this, the way I look at it, I mean, I have Juventus as the winners, Napoli as the winners up in Inter third. I think that I still believe that'll be the case, but I don't think that the difference in points between Napoli and Inter will be that much as big as I first thought in the beginning of the season.
Yeah,
because I really don't think that there's that much of a difference between these two teams.
Yep, I'm definitely with you there. I know some disagree. I got a lot of criticism for that take, but I'm totally with you there. So before we get to the Barca game, because I want to ask you what you think is going on there, there's been an Inter player who's been a lot of Premier League fans keep asking about him. He's been an amazing center back, and this is Skriniar. As you mentioned, he's formed a great partnership with De Vrij. You know, as I see it, Inter could be all set at that position for 7 years. With those two. So, you know, there's been a lot of buzz for him being linked to the Premier League. And look, I wouldn't fault any club for wanting to sign a player like that. So that buzz is understandable at my end. So before you tell us if you feel pretty confident he'll be a long-term piece at Inter, how would you describe him to someone who isn't that familiar with him?
The perfect modern central defender. I mean, he can do it all. His only weakness is that he's hardly a sprinter, if I put it mildly. He's not that fast in terms of one on one when it comes to running duels, but when sprinting, but he makes up for that by his incredible. But the Italians say grinta, but also intelligence. The guy is incredibly intelligent. He reads the games really well. He knows what's going to happen before it happens. And that allows him to make these pushes upwards and win the ball. And also, when he loses the ball, or when a teammate loses the ball, he has an incredible ability to win the ball back without fouling the opponent or getting himself booked or, conceding a penalty or a yellow card or anything, or a free kick or anything like that. He's really good in the air. His attitude, I mean, he's really good with his feet. I mean, for Slovakia, those who don't know, he plays as a regista almost for the national team. He doesn't play as a central defender. He plays as a deep line playmaker because of how good he can hit that, how well he can hit the ball and how well he can pass the ball. He is really a complete central forward, a central defender. The only difference is that he, again his speed in terms of sprinting he looks pretty slow, but he rarely puts himself in those positions.
Yep. Okay. So now let's talk about the big match. So as we mentioned, Inter's won every game except for the first time they played at the Camp Nou since that loss against Parma that we talked at the top. There's a lot of intriguing storylines between Rafinha and Nainggolan, who potentially is going to play, and, of course, Icardi. So tell us a little bit, what do you expect out of this match, and what do you think the buzz is going to be at San Siro? That first match against Spurs was absolutely breathtaking.
Well, I think you're going to see something like that as well. This is the game that Inter wanted to win. The away game at Barcelona was pretty much, I mean, immediately after the derby game was the important one to win. I think Inter were mentally drained. Despite all of that, missing so many players, Inter still put up a good fight against Barcelona. I mean, Barcelona are a Champions League contender. Inter aren't. This is the first time Inter are in the Champions League since 2012. So it would be absurd for me to think that Inter are going to win the Champions League or anything like that. But they really stood their ground away against Barcelona, and I think played really well, all things considering. This is the game though at the San Siro that the Inter want to win. This is the game that they think they can win, and they will have that crowd behind them. I mean, we're talking about an a new record. They're talking about over 80,000. Already there's 78,000 tickets sold. They're talking about 80,000. You know, we're talking capacity crowd, like over 80,000 for the first time in a very, very long time. And they will be behind Inter all the way. And this is a game where, you know, this is a game that Inter have been looking forward to for a very long time. And they played a Genoa side, and they were able to rotate quite a bit and play all the players that aren't in the Champions League squad and rest the rest. And when Nainggolan came on, he scored a goal. So he'll probably be starting. Perisic will probably start. Icardi will definitely start. This is an Inter who will want to beat Barcelona. And if they beat Barcelona, oh my God, I don't even know what will happen to the San Siro. It'll probably float off into space. I mean, that stadium will just launch into the galaxy. That the energy that will be released if Inter were to beat Barcelona. But if they were to do that, then they're through to the second round of the Champions League after being in the most difficult group of the Champions League, and that's truly remarkable.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, Nima. So now let's close on your exciting site. I've known you for a while because of Sempre Inter. It was great, still a great site now to get news, player interviews in English. You guys have a lot of great stuff. And there's a superb podcast, Studio Inter, that you've been doing for quite some time. I've been on it a few times. You often have Richard Hall, who we've also had on our podcast a lot. And you recently started our partnership with our great friend Phil Brown over at Beyond the Pitch. So tell us a little bit, for those not familiar with your podcast, what it's like and how this partnership came about and what you expect to come out of it.
Well, basically, we started this podcast 3 years ago. There wasn't a podcast in English about Inter out there. So we started it and we, you know, gradually built it up. And we have a good listenership, of which we're very proud of. And then I got in contact with Phil and Juan Arango at BTP Media, and they were launching their network, and they asked us basically, well, you know, we do, you know, we've got our platform. Would you guys be interested in having your show on our platform? And you know, it's basically we create content anyway, and they show it out to their listeners. So basically, it's like that. You know, we're available on our own platforms. We're also available on Forza Italian Football, and now we're available to Beyond the Pitch, who haven't done calcio content in a long time. So we're very proud that we're the only calcio content on there, even though it's only Inter. But the way we do the show is basically so that even if you aren't a hardcore Inter fan, you will enjoy it. It's not four guys sitting cursing and repeating each other and talking about how amazing Inter are and how everyone is horrible and Juve are, you know, the incarnation of Satan. So it's much more, you know, it's much more than that. We have great guests like yourself, like Gab Markovsky, like James Horncastle, etc. And, you know, people from other teams and support other teams to get the other side's perspective, to you know, give that great balance of a full coverage of Inter and the Serie A as much as possible.
Awesome. Well, great stuff. It's definitely an excellent podcast. Everyone check it out. There'll be a link to Sempre Inter on the description of today's podcast, so check it out. And Nima, thank you so much for joining us. Always a pleasure to chat with you.
It's always a pleasure to be on this show. I think the things you and I think I love what you and Alex do. I got to say, though, Alex on YouTube is hilarious. I got to admit that I watch it sometimes when I'm kind of having a shitty day, and watching him rant and get angry, like, it's funny. Somebody had done it was a really fun edit of Alex like ranting, but it was like an Eminem song over. I don't know how many times I've watched that. It's hilarious. So no, keep up the great work, in all seriousness. I love this podcast. I think it's the best one out there. So I'm gonna say, keep it up.